Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Some people hold on to jealousy until their knuckles turn white. They feel entitled to have whatever someone else has. King Saul was told that his kingdom was being given to David, yet he fought a fruitless battle for 10 years to keep what was no longer his. Today, the answer to the scourge of jealousy. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Pastor Lutzer concludes a message on catching the thief called jealousy, a study of the sad relationship between King Saul and David in 1 Samuel 18.
What Saul should have done in light of all of his terror is to simply say, God, I give it up. I give you the kingdom. Let David rule. Let him have it. Because I am your subject and your kingdom belongs to you. It's part of the larger kingdom that rules the universe, God. I am your subject in the midst of it, and I surrender my right to rule to you, the living and the true God. Then the evil spirit from the Lord would have had to cease his work. Parenthetically, no extra charge, no second offering. Think this through. Imagine Saul going to a contemporary, humanistic, secular psychiatrist. And they're trying to figure out the cause of the jealousy. And of course, they're finding it in Saul's background, which may be true. All kinds of interesting things are coming to the surface in the midst of these long, drawn-out sessions. But unfortunately, missing is any understanding of the spirit world and the relationship of people to God and the relationship of people to demons. And so that's why all of the attempts to resolve the matter are only temporary and fail. Because behind it is a tremendous spiritual battle. You say, well, was this true also of others that were jealous? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Remember, I told you that Cain killed Abel, the story that you know so well. What does it say in 1 John chapter 3, verse 12? It says, why did Cain kill Abel? It is because he was of that wicked one. He was of the devil. Because the devil wants you to be jealous, and then the devil wants you to fight back and preferably to kill, if necessary, to get that rival out of the way. The issue of control. Do you realize today, my friend, that God has every right to have somebody else bypass you in the promotional ladder? Even those who know less than you do. Do you realize that God has the right to help you to enable somebody else to be a success, and then because of your hard work, that person get the credit and that person get the commotion? The promotion? What you wish he will get is commotion, but he gets the promotion. Do you realize that it's perfectly okay for God to allow some of us to be born into homes where brothers and sisters were more gifted and talented and better looking than we are, and that we become, as it were, the unloved one of the family? Did you know that that's okay? Have you been willing to accept that kind of control? One day I saw a kid in a stroller, a little boy, and he had this steering wheel, and he was just turning it in a frenzy. And you know what? It didn't affect the direction he was going at all, because it wasn't connected to anything that mattered. And you know, there are people like that. You know, you think about Saul here. What is Saul trying to do? He's trying to manipulate to keep the kingdom. He's saying, I can't let the kingdom go. Listen, the kingdom is in God's hands. Now, mind you, sometimes there is the illusion of control. Sometimes the little boy in the stroller does go the same direction that he steers. For 10 long years, God let Saul still be king. And it gave him the illusion of control. But ultimately, at God's moment, David became the king. Some of you are hanging on because you don't want a rival. Some of you are unwilling to give up the control of your life to God, as if you think your scheming, your manipulation, the things that you do is going to accomplish what you want, your control, your possessiveness, your whatever. Give it up. Give it up. It's like a molecule thinking that it can control the universe. Just give it up. There's a second issue, and we're looking now at the soul almost as an onion that needs to be peeled away to get to the core. The second issue is companionship. If the first one is control, the second is companionship. What you must be willing to do is to give other people and those relationships over to God. Stop blaming them for the way you feel. Stop blaming them for betraying you. You need to love even those that are your rivals. Find somebody whom you hate and learn to love them. That's the Christian duty. That's the Christian responsibility, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who is given unto us. And as we receive the Spirit in His fullness, He will enable us to love people who are our rivals and decidedly unlovable. Third, it's the issue of contentment. Are you content with who you are? Are you content with your relationship with God? Are you content with the way in which God put you together, where He has planted you, your circumstances, your role in life? Are you willing to so submit that to God and say, I am going to be content? I've got your promises and I've got your love and I can make it. Jesus said, are you envious because God is generous? By the way, let me ask you that question. Are you envious because God is generous? Have you ever noticed that God sometimes blesses some people more than He should? Oh, I see that all the time. I mean, God blesses all kinds of people that I wouldn't bless if I were God. He is so generous. Is your eye envious because God is generous? Jesus said, cannot I do as I will with those who are my own? Do you realize that in being jealous, you're trying to play God and telling Him how to run His world? Give it up. Give your reputation to Him. Give your station in life to God and simply say, it is in your hands. Saul didn't. He ended up committing suicide because he said, I would rather die a suicide than give up the kingdom. Let me tell you the story of a friend of mine who is a minister, and because of immorality, he had to resign from his church. But even worse than that, he did some other things that made a reconciliation with his church and with his family basically impossible. I met with him this summer for a couple of hours, and this is essentially the way he told me his story, and I will reconstruct it as I remember it. He said, I want you to think of my life as being a shell, and in that shell is my soul. He said, all of my life, who I was totally determined by what other people thought of me. Of course, he struggled with jealousy, because anybody who is held hostage to the opinions of others has to be jealous, because what if they begin to think better of somebody else and speak ill of you and good about somebody else, you see? He said, everything that I was determined by my vocation and the people who affirmed me. He said, I hated confrontation because that always meant that there might be somebody who doesn't like me, and I found that very difficult to take. Now, he said, I want you to visualize that because of what I did, instantly, he said, in the minds of all of the people whose opinion I depended on, in their minds, I was now the scum of the earth. Furthermore, he said, all of the props that held me up were actually props that were not only kicked out from under me, but they became clubs by which I was clubbed by my family and by my friends. He said, I was so filled with shame and so filled with guilt that when I woke up in the morning, my question was, how do I go about putting one foot ahead of the other and somehow make it through the day? He said, if I had had the guts, I would have committed suicide. He said, you have to understand that when I began then to confess my sin and to get right with God and to read the Bible, he said, all that I could offer God was my raw, unprotected soul. I had nothing else, no friend, no affirmation, nothing. Unprotected soul, no longer hiding behind the opinions of others. That's all that it was. And he said, there in my despair, he said, God began to to put me together, to assure me that I'd been forgiven despite the terrible, terrible things that I've done, to help me to understand that I was accepted and even that I was loved by God despite my terrible sin. And he said, in those awful days, I had only God to cling to and look to him alone for my reason to live and for any value that I might still have. That is the heart, finally, of the wounded soul. To come to God and to say, God, all of the rivalry that I so fear, all of the jealousy of those that are around me, all of the things that I've thought about you, the way you created me and my place in life and the way I am, and I'm not successful and I'm standing in the shadow of others who are better than I, oh God, I give it to you. And I'm finished. I surrender the control of my life to you. I receive your love. I receive your forgiveness. And I'll look to you for my reason to live. Do you know why God put David through 10 years of running from Saul? It's to take the Saul out of David's heart. Because if David had just become king right after the Goliath experience, he'd have been another Saul. Because, pardon the poetry in me, there's a little bit of Saul in us all. And God says, I have to take the Saul out of your heart. He has to take the Saul out of my heart. He has to take the Saul out of yours. And he does it by putting us in circumstances and difficulties that keep making us look to him for our value and our reason to live. That's why David could say, the Lord is the strength of my light. Of whom shall I be afraid? What he was saying was, all the spear throwers, and some of you live with spear throwers, all of those spear throwers, I've committed them to God, and I believe that God will defend me. That's the issue of control. David said, the issue of companionship, he said in the same psalm, I will meditate, O Lord, in thy temple, and my thoughts shall be of thee. And then, of course, comfort. At the end of the psalm, he says, though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will pick me up. Did you know that David was an unloved child? There's evidence in the Bible that he was unloved as the last born. And that's why he still struggles in his old age with his parents. That's why he said in Psalm 27, though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will pick me up. Wait on the Lord, he says, and God will strengthen, God will heal your heart. I say to you today, just give it up. Just give it up.
And my friend, you're going to have to give it up again and again. We can ask the question, why is it that David was able to give praise to God in the midst of his difficulty? It's because he knew that he could control his thoughts. I've written a book entitled Living with Your Passions, and one of the chapters is entitled We Can Control Our Thoughts, because actually it is our thought life that determines our actions.
Pastor Erwin Lutzer, concluding Catching the Thief Called Jealousy. Another message in a series on pulling together in a world tearing apart. Next time on Running to Win, join us for a message on overcoming empty obsessions. Temptation affects all of us. Pastor Lutzer has written a book on living with your passions, guidance on keeping sex where it belongs. We'd like to send this book as a thank you for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Ask about living with your passions. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.